afternoon.
It is the afternoon, Sam.
Yay! You're listening to Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480, and we are live the whole hour today. So feel free to give us a call about whatever you feel like talking about, as long as it has to do with atheism, skepticism, and the separation of church and state. If you want to give us your recipes for, I don't know, apple fritters or something, that's probably best left for post-show, is my idea. Not that I'm unwilling to talk about recipes, as you know.
What is the atheist viewpoint on apple fritters, Sam? And does it differ from the religious viewpoint apple fritters?
Dave, can you help me out? What the heck are apple fritters?
Well, I feel like we should go with the old Carl Sagan apple pie recipe.
Ooh.
To create an apple pie from scratch. First, you have to create the universe.
Yeah, fair point. That was a very nice... Bring it right back to the subject. But I feel like being... I feel like talking about other things for a few minutes. For example, the weather. Hasn't it been fantastic the last few days?
Fantastic. It's been cold.
So says the Chicagoan.
Well, yeah. This is the cold weather I like. I like cold weather that's... It's cold. It's dry. It's the air is absolutely clear. You can see for 8,000 miles in any given direction. The mountains look beautiful. This is the cold weather that I'm okay with. When it snows 700 inches and you have to dig your way to your mailbox, that's when I start going, okay, I'm done with this winter crap.
And we should acknowledge that while we in the Pacific Northwest are experiencing some chilly weather,
yeah,
nice, clear, cold, a lot of the states are experiencing a lot of slush and ice and all sorts of stuff, so stay safe.
And that's sort of my point, is we, you know, everybody's complaining about the cold, but have you looked at the national weather reports recently?
It's pretty bad. I saw a thing online yesterday that said that the difference in temperature around the country from the highest, which was in somewhere in Florida, and the lowest, which was in Idaho, was 118 degrees difference.
Wow.
That's a huge delta.
That is a huge delta. Oh, man. So, yeah, again, you're listening to Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. So, I got an announcement here. We have a party coming up. The Humanists of Washington, along with Seattle Atheists and the University Unitarian Humanists, will gather on Saturday, December 14th at 5 p.m. to celebrate the coming winter solstice. Attendees are asked to bring a potluck dish and a family-friendly wrapped gift for the White Elephant Exchange. Kids and teens are welcome and encouraged, and volunteers are needed in the kitchen, kids area for setup and cleanup. You can go to meetup.com/secularseattle to RSVP. And I could definitely use some help in the kitchen. And I'm not just joking, because I'm the one who's going to be doing the kitchen. You know, again, I'm the president of Humanists of Washington, so this is part, you know, I'm partly responsible for what's going on. And I want to make sure we do a good time. So if you feel like helping me out, I would appreciate it. And if you don't feel like helping out because it's the holidays and you want to relax and hang out with other humanists and atheists, then just show up. You know, bring a white elephant gift. And we really mean white elephant gift here.
Yep. I mean, I'm going to be in the kids area for a little bit. We're going to be doing some crafts and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Should have a good time. And I know that there's some people that bring their typical holiday cookies and baked goods and things like that.
Yeah.
And it goes to show that atheists, humanists, and people that are non-religious still like to gather for these sort of seasonal events.
Yeah.
And we have we attach a lot of fondness to this time of the year for many of us.
It's a good time, you know, we mark the passage of time. Holidays, you know, they were like feast days and they're religious days, but people do need, you know, specific times. I'm like, for me, example, if you don't give me a specific time to get together with my friends and relax and like have a family moment or a friend's moment, I'll work until I die because I just forget time.
Well, yeah, and this is often I'll get a call from Sam. It's like, I need to do something other than the thing I'm doing. Come over and watch TV with me or
that's
something.
True. So. That is true. So it's a pretty packed news week this week, and I am sad to discuss. I really doubt you're hearing it from us first, but Nelson Mandela passed away this week, unfortunately. And I know that's euphemistic, but it's the usual euphemism. Whatever, don't care. And we have a news story on it, and this is FIFA mourns humanist Mandela as Christians claim religion as Mandela's bedrock. FIFA President Sepp Blatter released a statement saying the former South Africa president was probably one of the greatest humanists of our time. Blatter said he and Mandela shared an unwavering belief in the extraordinary power of football to unite people in peace and friendship. It should be noted that Mandela was a Methodist Christian. A few weeks before he was elected South Africa's president, Mandela's 1994 speech at the Zionist Christian Church Easter Conference plainly showed his ecumenical Christian outlook. The good news borne by our risen Messiah, who chose not one race, who chose not one country, who chose not one language, who chose not one tribe, who chose all of humankind. And what's really interesting here, and especially having you with us, is there's the confluence of, you know, civil rights and freedom for all, religion and lack of religion and humanism. And soccer,
which is my favorite thing. And it's actually, it's an interesting little sort of subject, because in South Africa, soccer is hugely important because soccer was always seen as sort of the lower class or black sport, whereas rugby was seen as the upper class white sport.
Really?
And so there is actually a major tie. When Mandela was in prison, he actually worked really hard to make soccer more universally accepted with everyone in the prisons. There's actually a great documentary that was on ESPN about all of the political prisoners starting a soccer league while they were in prison. Like, soccer is hugely important to the South African culture, and it was a great way to sort of, because when Mandela got out and got elected president, you know, he very easily could have taken a more hardline stance of, okay, now we are in power and we're going to put them down because they held us down, but that's not what he did. He said, I want an integrated society, and sports is one of the ways he tried to do that. Unfortunately, this comes from Sepp Blatter. Now, Sepp Blatter, if you don't know, he's the president of FIFA, and he is one of the most corrupt and terrible individuals walking the planet. He is Silvio...
Really?
Yeah, he is Silvio Berlusconi of the sports world.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a very strong condemnation. Tell us, Dave.
He's in charge of running, like, the World Cup bids and seeing which country get the World Cup, and the entire process is just covered in corruption and bribes, and he is at the center of it, and he won't do anything about it. He's made sexist and racist statements. So one time he actually said that to improve viewership of women's soccer in the world, what we need is smaller shorts on the women.
Oh, dear.
Like, really?
And this is a person in charge of the highest level of soccer on the international stage. And so I honestly don't want him talking about Mandela. I don't want him going anywhere near Mandela, because he can only sully...
Well, given what he's done for the sport, though, I imagine something would need to be said, and it might be seen as disrespectful to not say something. And
that's true, especially since the last World Cup, which the World Cup is the FIFA event. That is the thing that they focus on. And the last one was in South Africa. And Mandela was a large part of bringing it there.
And that was one of Nelson Mandela's final public appearances before he went into declining health.
Yes. And unfortunately, it was also when he actually delayed that appearance because his granddaughter had died in a car accident during the games. And it was like the morning he was first supposed to open the ceremonies. And so he had to back out of that. And so, it was one of the last times we saw him publicly.
So if Sepp Blatter maybe is not the best representative of humanism, maybe he
Is he a representative of humanism?
Because
I did want to bring that around, is that he describes Nelson Mandela as a humanist, but he was a Methodist, and there's a lot of people who think those are mutually exclusive.
I don't think that they're mutually exclusive, and we can get to that in just a moment, but I think that one of the things that, to counter Sepp Blatter's, to counter Dave's assertion that Sepp Blatter is one of the worst human beings on Earth, perhaps maybe he has this little self-acknowledgement that maybe he's not the best humanist, but Nelson Mandela provides a really good model for him to achieve that kind of thing.
And that is
I think you're. That sounds like a huge pile of wishful thinking.
I agree.
I use the adjective pile, or not? I don't know what that. I use the pile word quite intentionally in this case. and so I'll bring it back to what I said before: is that he is described as a humanist by FIFA, and he is a Methodist, and a lot of people that we've been talking to recently. I can't let this go, man. That talk about practicing humanism, a lot of people use the word humanist as a stand-in for evil Satanist, and we got a story about that one later, but it's not. Humanism is a philosophy. It can be, in our case, secular humanism, which is humanism without religion, but there is such a thing as a Christian humanist. Nelson Mandela was an example of it.
And many of his aspirations and the things that he fought for and the things that he spoke for and the things that he went to jail for, many of those things are very humanistic in their outlook.
Yeah.
The value and the dignity of individuals, regardless of race, language, culture, class, and religion for that matter. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was a Methodist, but he worked with, you know, very closely with Archbishop Desmond Tutu, who is Anglican.
Right.
And he, you know, and he very much fought for Indians in South Africa, Indian expats in South Africa, which would not be Christian. And there's a lot of humanism within Nelson Mandela's outlook, but he himself was a religious person.
But as atheists, we have this, we always have to have this sort of internal argument whenever we deal with somebody who's a religious Christian, or sorry, a religious humanist, specifically Christian or Islamic, because there are humanists of both types, where, you know, they have the tenets of humanism. People are essentially good. People can work towards a common goal, you know, civil rights and equality for all. But then they have this religion that suggests that slavery is okay and you can hit your wife with a stick and, you know, you can have several wives if you feel like it. And the opinions of your wives might not necessarily mean anything. And so that is a problem in the atheist communities. We have to make the decision, you know, how does that work? How do we walk that line? Because a lot of people are asking, well, how do you be a Christian and a humanist? And I'm like, but I think sometimes we forget, how do you be an atheist humanist dealing with with theist humanists?
Well, and it's, I feel this falls under sort of, if the show has a motto here, it's people are better than their religion. I feel like the more humanist, the more a person sort of doesn't hold to their the tenets of their religion, the more humanist they can be. And maybe that's a little cruel, but it seems like, you know, I know plenty of people of very great faith who don't think that women shouldn't speak in churches, who don't think, you know, all these horrible things that you might find in the Bible. They don't believe that, and I think they would be great humanists. They would never describe themselves as such, because the word is sort of being co-opted by the atheist community.
Right.
But I think that they do make good humanists, because they care about humans first, that they want to reduce suffering, and they want to make the world a better place for everybody.
Right. And those are people that I'm willing to work with. A lot of people ask you, you know, how do you as an atheist, and how do you as an atheist activist work with people who are not atheists on things like Referendum 74, for example? And I mean, that's a great example for us, is that who was our partner organization informally during that whole Referendum 74 battle?
I think when we were really fighting to establish marriage equality in Washington, one of the unlikely pairings was Mormons for Equality.
Yeah.
And it, you know, it's a human condition to hold cognitive dissonance in one's head, and you can come from a cultural line of a particular religion that has all of these awful things within its history. But one of the extraordinary things about human beings is that they can recognize in many cases when something's destructive and say, we are going to outwardly reject that part of our history and change it.
Right. And I do think it's sometimes it's necessary to recognize that that people have changed. This is something that the atheist community does, is they continue banging on these horrible things in the Bible when people have you know, gotten rid of them, where people say, yeah, we don't follow that stuff anymore. But this is a weird line to walk. On one hand, we need to credit people who have stood up and rejected the horrible domestic policy of the Bible, who've rejected the horrible international policy of the Bible. But then that's not all that's destructive in the Bible. And that just because they've given those up doesn't mean that their record is spotless. And it's confusing for me sometimes having to walk that line.
Well, and I think it's also the same thing with, if you look at the atheist community, there are plenty of people, just because they don't buy into gods, buy into really horrible things.
Yeah.
I will point you to Bill Maher and his anti-vax state.
Exactly. Phase. Yeah.
Like, that's just being humanist, you know.
Being an atheist is not a calling card to rationality. I mean,
exactly.
Or compassion, for that matter.
In order to be compassionate, you have to be compassionate. In order to be rational, you have to be rational. You don't get these things for free just by deciding that religion doesn't make any sense. And that's something that we have to pay really close attention to sometimes. You know, I think it's necessary. I think it's necessary both for atheists and Christians to for us to continue pointing out the problems in the Bible and how that might poison their morality. But I think we also sometimes need to recognize when their morality has moved on. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. When we come back from the break, we're going to go into a little bit of a history lesson.
Billy, I am a Nigerian prince, and I want to hide a bajillion dollars in your locker.
Wow, a bajillion dollars?
All I need is your lunch money.
What a great deal. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Just because you want to believe something doesn't mean you should. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled, week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
Do you have an idea for a website but don't know how to get started? Are you tired of expensive hosting draining your budget dry? Archway Hosting can help. Archway's fully functional hosting service starts at $20 per year and includes hosting, databases, email, and much more. Have an idea for a website or application and don't know where to begin? Check out Archway. They also do web design and development. To get your online presence off to a great start, check out archwayhosting.com. That's ARCHWAY hosting.com.
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Doran.
And we host a podcast called Radio Versus the Martians. We invite a rotating panel of our friends over to talk about science fiction, comic books, movies, horror, animation, professional wrestling, video games, and George freaking Lucas.
It's a warts and all look at popular geek culture, where we tip sacred cows and use profanity while arguing about children's entertainment.
Think of it as the McLaughlin Group for nerds.
Find us online at RadioVersusTheMartians.com.
Ask an Atheist may have gone on the road, but we're not making big bucks.
We still need to keep the lights on, and 95% of our costs are for airtime alone.
That's why we need your contributions.
If you've got something to advertise, consider Ask an Atheist in your ad budget.
Our listener Peggy said it best. Step up and contribute to keep secular voices on the air. For $5, you could have a latte or a moment of science.
Take on Peggy's challenge and contribute today.
For details, go to askanatheist.tv or contribute directly via PayPal to paypal@askanatheist.tv.
Join the Ask an Atheist after party at Doyle's Public House. The Ask an Atheist crew will be there at 5 for good beers, food, and you're invited. You'll find a dozen beers on tap, including Stella, Guinness, Smithwick's Irish Ale, Twisted Thistle IPA, and Fuller's London Porter, as well as dozens of domestic and imported beers and bottles. Join us for Good Atheist Conversation and meet the crew today at 5 at Doyle's, 208 St. Helens Avenue in Tacoma.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. So we do have an email, and this email goes, "Please don't send me a thank you note or receipt or anything through the mail. I'm keeping my disbelief to myself and attempting to keep my activity to myself. I know the post office worker in person. It could be very bad for my future career." Another message we've gotten is, "Nobody knows I'm a heathen, and I don't want the mailbox to talk." As you might notice, these are all messages regarding Peggy's challenge and people who help keep the lights on for us. And I thought I would take a minute and let you guys know, we don't send thank you notes. I feel a little weird not sending thank you notes. I feel a little weird. I always feel like when you contribute to the show, you should get something for your contribution. Your contribution should be honored. I think the easiest thing we can do is mention on the air who donates to the show, because anything we do as far as sending out flyers or newsletters or anything like that to people who donate causes that problem. And, you know, further, I'm a little bit hinky about privacy. I don't know if you guys have noticed, but when I'm not doing Ask an Atheist, I'm a bit of a computer nerd, and computer nerds as a group of people tend to be a little weird about privacy.
Yeah, and I think that we have so many listeners that are both locally in the Pierce County area, in Seattle, in Washington, and in some places where there really isn't this kind of media, and where outing yourself as an atheist would be very, very scary and damaging, possibly.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of parts in the country where they face like serious consequences for coming out, and it's not something that we face here. It's something that I don't actually have to deal with on a regular basis, but we always have to keep in mind that we're lucky for that. We're really fortunate.
You'd be surprised, you know, especially here in Pierce County, but I just want to put everybody at ease that we are very careful about privacy, and we do not send any emails. So if you we send a copy of your email that you send to us to keep for your records, but honestly, if you don't want a copy of it, if you don't want your information getting out, I think I'm going to have to write a blog post about simple privacy tricks for people who listen to Ask an Atheist. I might have to do that. So we'd like to thank Kenny from Sioux Falls, South Dakota, for contributing to Peggy's challenge. And so this is something that helps keep us on the air. It's really, you know, it's really important to keep the show going. But I want to let you guys know that privacy is important to us. We know that part of what we do is letting theists know that atheists exist and we're normal people and we're okay people. But another thing that we do is sometimes we are a lifeline for atheists who feel that they're alone. And
emails saying, please don't share my information with anyone, are the least of the kinds of emails that we get. We and other atheists in media and other organizations frequently get pained emails and letters from people saying, I don't know what to do. What can I do? I feel like I'm all alone. We spoke to Recovering from Religion. We spoke to the American Atheists. I mean, people get emails all the time from people in different parts of the country, in different family situations, saying, please help me. I don't know what to do. And we can't always help directly, but we can give a voice to those who are out there, and we can give a voice to many atheists saying, hey, this is kind of a little sliver of life of what it's like for an atheist.
And sometimes we know people who can help, and we can get people into contact with other people if contact is warranted. So I don't want to suggest that we're completely passive. But I also want to let people know a little bit of what goes on behind the scenes. When we read these emails, or when we do these voicemails or stuff like that, we refer to callers or contributors, you notice we always use a first name. A lot of times, especially with some of these emails that have to do with really sensitive issues, the first name is an invention. I'll just come out right out and say it. That's a lot of the times, even if the person emailing us doesn't request it, if we feel like there's a possible privacy issue, we'll change the first name and we'll change the location to make it clear, you know, just to muddy the trail a little bit. Your privacy, you know, it should be your decision about how you tell people you're an atheist. If you're an atheist, that should be your decision. And that's not, we don't want to take that away. We don't want to inadvertently take that away from people by reading your name and address on the air. That is not something I ever want to do.
And I also would say that there's a part of the atheist community that is really sort of unsympathetic to this, that they think, you know, you should be out. You're causing us harm by not being out, by keeping it secret. You're making it okay to be other secret. And, you know, we have to understand that outing somebody else is one of the worst things you can do. It has to be your decision to come out because you know when it's going to be safe.
Okay, I was trying to tiptoe around that one, but if you're going to bring it up, honestly, I think if more people came out, if more atheists were more public about their atheism, it would make it easier for people to be atheists. And I think...
Absolutely.
And this is something that the LGBT community learned. You know, the more people who said, yeah, I am gay, the more socially acceptable it became. And we're sort of still in that phase. Example, Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Yes, but this is one that you and I have argued a lot about. But at the same time, I feel like... I want to encourage everyone to come out who could possibly come out. That would help the atheist community so much.
Yeah.
But at the same time, nobody should be forced to come out, and nobody should be pressured to come out before they're ready.
Exactly so. Well, I think they should be encouraged. Sometimes pressure is helpful, but not coercion, not coercive pressure.
Right.
That's not good.
One of the things that I think is really interesting is the number of people that say, no, I don't believe in God. No, I'm not religious, but I'm not an atheist.
Yeah.
And for those people, I would say, you know what? Atheism really just means that you are without a belief in God.
Those people I am genuinely angry at, believe it or not.
And I would say to people who say, I'm not religious and I don't believe in God, but I'm not an atheist. No, really, it's okay. It's okay to say you are an atheist because...
Yeah.
And it's okay to say, I'm an atheist, but I don't like doing this or saying this. I am an atheist, and I feel this way.
Yeah.
Because atheism just merely means you don't believe in God. One of the local groups, Seattle Atheists, has a great t-shirt. It says, yes, I'm an atheist, and I'm also lots of other things.
This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. And the last time, Dave, you joined us behind the microphone, well, since that time, we had a little bit of an adventure with local government.
Yes, it was Mr. Mulvey and Brulette go to Pierce County Council.
Not quite Washington.
Yeah, not
we're already
quite
in Washington.
Well, I'm already in Washington. Well, so last week we read an email from that guy. Like I said, I can't let this go.
Yes.
It's the first time, I'll be honest with you, part of the reason I can't let this go is because it's the first time I've ever, rather than just reporting on it, it's the first time I've personally faced this sort of thing.
Yeah, it was me too. My first time in front of, you know, go up to council.
Yeah. And it's really interesting to me.
And for a little background, this is about Councilman Jim McCune, who wanted to allot government money, county government money, for an evangelical fellowship. And he said, no, I'm withdrawing this, but still, our founding fathers wanted this to be Christian.
Yeah.
Everyone should have equal access to money.
So in the middle of my bile spewing last week, I decided that maybe it would be a good idea, since he references case law and the original intent of the framers.
Congressional record.
And congressional record.
Congressional
that
record.
Perhaps today we would explore it a little bit.
Let's.
I think we should. I mean, McCune really has no legs to stand on.
Yeah.
Like,
for example, the sort of almost the archetypical example of this, the exemplar of separation of church and state is Thomas Jefferson. Not a perfect guy, but he had some interesting things to say on this. Example, I contemplate with sovereign reverence that act of the whole American people, which declared that their legislature should make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, thus building a wall of eternal separation of church and state.
And this is his famed letter to the Danbury Baptists.
Yes, this is an important, it's not an official document of the U.S. government, but it certainly gives us insight into the original intent of the framers.
Certainly, and when Jim McCune states in his letters to his constituents, if it's good enough for the founding fathers, it's good enough for me.
So Congress thus inhibited from acts respecting religion, and the executive authorized only to execute their acts, I have refrained from prescribing even those occasional performances of devotion, practiced indeed by the executive of another nation as the legal head of its church, but subject here as religious exercises only to the voluntary regulations and discipline of each respective sect.
Saying, hey, I'm not going to be like Church of England, like the king, performing my religious devotional acts as both my head of state.
The president is not head of church.
Exactly.
And so, okay, if it was good enough for the founding fathers, then apparently this is good enough for you. And so Jefferson first wrote, confining myself, therefore, to the duties of my station, which are merely temporal, be assured that your religious rights shall never be infringed by any act of mine and that.
And this is something that the Library of Congress have documented and said, hey, this is his initial thing, and these are his revisions. Those lines were crossed out.
So he tries again, and he writes, adhering to this great act of national legislation in behalf of the rights of conscience, next, and then he crossed that out and wrote, adhering to this expression of the supreme will of the nation in behalf of the rights of conscience, I shall see with friendly dispositions the progress of those sentiments which tend to restore to man all his natural rights, convinced that he has no natural rights in opposition to his social duties.
So this is really saying, really, I don't want to get in the middle of your own praying. That is your right to pray. But really, it is not the government's position to do so.
And this is one of the things that when you look at the early framers and they want to erect this, it's because they are all looking at the rest of Europe and the rest of sort of high societies where they're all monarchs, mm-hmm. they're all heads of the church, they're all, you know, everything's intertwined. Each country has its own specific religion.
Yeah.
And it never worked. It always created strife. It always created bloodshed. It created wars. And so they've said, no, we are going to wash our hands of that. You pray what you want. We are not in the business of dealing with any sort of religion.
So speaking on Jefferson's notes on the state of Virginia, he writes, "The legitimate powers of government extend to such acts only as are injurious to others. But it does me no injury for my neighbor to say that there are 20 gods or no god. It neither picks my pocket nor breaks my leg."
I love it.
And the nice thing about that one is that it closely approaches one of those like sort of macro sayings that atheists use that I actually kind of find annoying.
And what's that?
The, you know, oh, you don't, you worship this god? Well, which one? How about all these millions of other gods?
To me, it doesn't really speak of that. It says, you know what? I don't really care if you are a polytheist, an atheist, or you worship my god or not. Really? I don't care.
It's sort of the less argumentative version of that argument, I would say.
Okay.
Well, I'm with Becky on this one. I don't really make that connection. I feel more what he's saying.
I'm not suggesting that that Thomas Jefferson is some sort of weird time traveler, came to the 21st century, heard an atheist said that, and said, hey, that's a great idea, and then included it in on his notes in the state of Virginia.
Time Lord Jefferson.
I'm suggesting it sort of wanders close to that sort of thing.
It does. I feel what he's really trying to get at is like, it's more important to me that you're a good neighbor than whatever you believe. Like, can I live next to you without us having conflict?
Yeah.
You know, fine, believe what you want.
Now, these things are all notes from Thomas Jefferson. These are not official documents. So perhaps it's time to talk about an official document of the United States government. And this is something that atheists talk a lot, which is the Treaty of Tripoli. We've referenced it a lot on the show, but we haven't really addressed it specifically. So it was unanimously approved by the Senate under President Adams on June 10th, 1797. The Treaty of Peace and Friendship with the North African State of Tripoli. And it dealt mostly with maritime trade, which at the time, the country was under some significant threat in terms of trade.
Yeah, I believe at this time, Algiers had declared war. Tripoli and Algiers and Tunis were a part of this confederation called the Barbary States. Mm-hmm. And really, U.S. merchant vessels were really prime targets for piracy in this area. And the British were doing nothing to try and stop that because they really wanted to undermine our maritime trade.
So for our purposes, the thing that we should focus on here is Article 11 of the Treaty of Tripoli, which says, "As the government of the United States of America is not founded in any sense on the Christian religion, as it has in itself no character of enmity against the laws, religion, or tranquility of the Muslims?" Oh, Muslimin, okay. 1700s, whatever. Muslims. "And that the said states have never entered into any war or active hostility against any Mohammedan nation." Wow, 18th century. "It is declared by the parties that no pretext arising from religious opinions shall ever produce an interruption of the harmony existing between the two countries." This was a treaty written, passed, you know, signed by the president, passed by the Senate.
It was unanimously passed.
And not just unanimously passed. People think like things were a lot easier in the late 1700s. No, not true. Things were so... There was so much fighting in the Senate. This was only the third thing, or the third bill, treaty, or anything passed by the Senate unanimously.
Yeah, treaties were a new concept. If the idea of separation of church and state was a new concept or a concept still under debate in the United States government, this treaty would not have passed. It would have entailed a change in total government policy, not just foreign policy.
I'd like to address some of the criticisms that people say that, well, this doesn't really count. There are people who like revisionist history that say, hey, Article 11 doesn't even belong in the treaty, and it was never even there to begin with. They try and rewrite it. And one of the things that this comes from is from a Dutch scholar that looked at the Arabic translation of the treaty and says, hey, Article 11's missing from the Arabic translation of the treaty. That's because the Arabic translation of the treaty isn't at all a translation. It's a gibberish, a jumbled approximation detailing some of the conversations that went on.
It sounds like notes.
Yes.
Somebody's notes.
Yes.
Okay.
And there's a lot more that's missing and a lot of other stuff that's not in the treaty.
The important thing here is that this Article 11 was in the document that was signed or that was ratified by the Senate.
Yes.
This is the key point here. And this was in the late 18th century, which means a lot of the... What's that?
I wonder then if that's why McCune says, I go by congressional records. Is he saying congressional records and not senatorial records? Is he really a strict... Does he create that delineation?
I don't know. then that's weird to me if that would be, because as far as I know, congressional record generally means both.
Well, yes.
Yeah.
The term Congress covers both House and Senate, so yeah. When people say congressional record, yeah, they cover both.
All right, so no outsies.
Yeah, so, the important point here is that Article 11 was ratified by the Senate, separation of church and state, and United States being explicitly not a Christian nation was unanimously ratified by a Senate which included a lot of the framers of the Constitution, and it was not a weird thing to say. It was not, it sparked very little debate. I mean, there were definitely framers of the Constitution which were very devout Christians. John Adams, is an example. I might be getting that wrong. But there were people in the United States who were Christians. A lot of people who came to the United States were kicked out of their respective countries for being weird Christians. I am not denying that the United States is, has a Christian social substrate, but that is not the same. And very much not the same as the United States being a Christian dominionist nation.
In fact, I would say just the opposite. Like when you, it was a huge Christian substrate who founded this, but they founded it specifically to avoid the very problems that having a dominionist attitude causes.
Yeah.
That was their sole purpose, was to stop the blending of religion and politics.
And this is something I keep referencing, is that they saw the separation of church and state as a protection both for the people and for religions. Because here's an interesting thing for dominionists. If you are going to say that America is a Christian nation and policy should be dictated by the church, that means that as a citizen of the United States, and the United States being a representative republic or democracy, that I should have a say in how your religion goes. So the minute you try to make religion part of the government, I have a voice in your religion. Now ask yourself, do you really want somebody like me going into your church and telling you that, again, everything you think is wrong, that these things are terrible, that if this religion is the law of the land, everything is going to have to change, and the way you worship is wrong. And you are going to change, and this is and your religion, your religious representation is going to be different, and you are going to have to think differently about your religion because we, as the citizens of the United States, are dictating your religion. Is that something you want? That's what the First Amendment protects you from. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. When we come back, we're going to continue talking about history and then talk about stuff a little bit more current.
The Humanists of Washington is the oldest humanist organization in the state and offers a community of freethinkers who educate the public and celebrate life. Come celebrate life with us. Humanists support intellectual freedom and critical thinking and hold that human beings are autonomous centers of moral development. You can become a member of the Humanists of Washington at humanistsofwashington.org. You'll get our quarterly publication, The Secular Humanist Press. Check out meetup.com, where you can be part of our monthly Seattle dinner and our Heathens Do It Better breakfast. Humanists of Washington.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
Out of the briny depths of the internet comes a comic book podcast so powerful it cannot be contained by a single continent. Mike and Paul, save the universe!
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Paul Root.
If you're an unsatisfied comics fan, we want to help you find better comics.
And if you've never picked up a comic before in your life, we want to help you find what could be your new favorite thing.
On Mike and Paul Save the Universe, we love the bejesus out of comics, and so should you.
Find us online at mikeandpaul.com.
Looking to buy or sell a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, or surrounding areas? Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 or visit dndrealty.ca and discover how he works with you to achieve your goals, save you time, and protect your investment. Don Summers of Professional Realty Group. It's time you hired a professional.
If you enjoy the programming we create on Ask an Atheist, please make a contribution with us. Your sponsorship keeps our show in the air and improves the quality of our broadcasts. Don't make us beg. Please go to askanatheist.tv and contribute today.
So you're on your Monday morning drive, and someone on Ask an Atheist says something that really, really gets your goat. You want to talk, you want to yell, you want to scream, and clicking the shiny red candy-like button just isn't good enough. Good! Call us! Leave us a message! Call Ask an Atheist at 206-420-0997 and vent your spleen now and for the future! That's 206-420-0997 and wait for the tone.
Welcome back! This is Ask an Atheist 253-584-1480. Becky has scads and scads of stuff on Thomas Jefferson. I mean, there's the letter to the Danbury Baptists, and then there's the thing that he put on his gravestone, right?
Yeah, you know, if you go to Monticello, apparently I have not been, but it doesn't say, "Here lies Thomas Jefferson, former president." It says something to the effect of, "Here lies Thomas Jefferson, crafter of this amazing act for Virginia that establishes religious freedom." And it's really not the same kind of religious freedom bills that are coming up now that says, yeah, I should be free to proclaim my religion in all halls of government and schools.
Yeah.
It's really quite amazing. It's it basically said, hey, you know, we don't want to have anyone be forced to tithe.
But my point here is I don't want to just talk about Thomas Jefferson.
Certainly.
He was not the only person who thought that the separation of church and state was important. For example, we can talk about James Madison's 1785 memorial and remonstrance against religious assessments. And written in 1785 in opposition to a proposal by Patrick Henry that all Virginians be taxed to support teachers of the Christian religion. And it has statements in it like, because religion be exempt from the authority of the society at large, still less can it be subject to that of the legislative body. And we hold it for a fundamental and undeniable truth that religion, or the duty which we owe to our Creator and the manner of discharging it, can be directed only by reason and by conviction, not by force or violence.
And this goes directly into what Jim McCune was trying to say, is that what James Madison is saying is you cannot tax people and give that money to the church. You cannot
right.
force tithing. You cannot use public funds to promote religion. And Jim McCune is basically saying, well, yes, we can, because that's freedom of religion.
Yeah.
Somehow.
The,
like, he's trying to turn the whole thing right on his head.
For somebody who talks about original intent so much, he gets it so fundamentally wrong. Now, let's talk about some other people. You know, President Garfield on taxation. The divorce between church and state ought to be absolute. It ought to be so absolute that no church property anywhere, in any state or in the nation, should be exempt from equal taxation. For if you exempt the property of any church organization to that extent, you impose a tax upon the whole community. James A. Garfield, Congressional Record, 1874, etc., etc. That's not some. That's not Richard Dawkins. That's not me. That's not Mike Gillis. That's not Sam Harris.
It's not a founder in his
it's
letter
not a
or musings.
Founder. But it's in the Congressional Record.
Absolutely.
And apparently we pay attention to the Congressional Record.
It's part of our history. It's right there.
It's part of our history. And taxing churches is kind of a note that a lot of atheists are hitting. Did you guys know you had presidential support for that at one point?
Yeah, yeah. And we have a neat quote from Millard Fillmore, which I'm going to read, because who talks about Millard Fillmore? I am tolerant of all creeds, yet if any sect suffered itself to be used for political objects, I would meet it by political opposition. In my view, church and state should be separate, not only in form, but fact. Religion and politics should not be mingled.
What's amazing is that we have all of these quotes from the 1800s, you know, from the early 1800s up through, you know, Garfield in the 1870s. And any of these politicians would be slew today. I mean,
yeah,
they it would just be political.
They would be laughed.
It would be political suicide to say these types of things as a politician. Now, even people who are not politicians are decried as those meddling atheists who just want to undermine Christianity and take away our Christmas trees. Mm. And aren't they mean?
One final quote. Again, it's not a framer of the Constitution, but a lot of people consider Abraham Lincoln to be our finest president. And he wrote, "The United States government must not undertake to run the churches. When an individual, in the church or out of it, becomes dangerous to the public interest, he must be checked."
And I feel like this addresses what you were saying before we went to break, is that the purpose of the separation of church and state is not only to protect the state, it's also to protect the church.
Because historically, not only was religion used as a tool of statecraft, but if the king didn't like a certain policy in a religion, he'd, I don't know, throw all the Catholics out and start a new religion?
Yeah, something like that.
Something like that? Mm-hmm. I don't think there's a record of that happening anywhere. So, but here's the thing. If you let people like me, if you want Christian dominionism and you want people like me dictating policy about your religion, you also have to dictate, you have to let other people have a voice.
The Scientologists.
For example, the Scientologists, or in Oklahoma, the Satanists, who seek a spot on the Oklahoma State House steps.
Sam, weren't you just calling for this?
I know. So Oklahoma conservatives zealously defending a privately funded Ten Commandments monument on State House steps may have unwittingly opened the door to Satanists who are seeking to put up their own statue. While the local ACLU chapter filed a lawsuit against the Ten Commandments, New York-based Satanic Temple took a different approach. Temple spokesman Lucian Greaves notified the state's Capital Preservation Commission of his group's intent to donate a monument. Greaves assured state officials that their designs would abide by guidelines requiring monuments to be in good taste and consistent with community standards. He described possible designs, a pentagram, an interactive display for children, and an homage to the historic and literary Satan.
I think it's a lovely idea, Mr.
Yes! Yes! Ah! It begins. Oh! Because here's... I want to see how this plays out. There's going to be a lot of people who are just going to laugh this out of the room. But at some point, if this group in New York is really going to push it, and by all means, I hope they do, how these Ten Commandments people respond to that is going to be incredibly instructive.
It'll be revealing about what their true purpose is.
That's going to be, do we really have any questions about what their true purpose is?
And no, but they like to think that their true purpose is not to espouse Christianity.
No, they want their, no, they know their true purpose
they're
is the Great Commission.
It.
They just don't want it to be talked about because then they would have to remove the monument. What it would be instructive about is intelligence about how they think. This will be good intel for those of us who are trying to get the monuments off public property.
Well, exactly. I mean, what they're trying, you know, the people who post the monuments all know exactly what they're doing. They're all doing a very religious reason, but they have their justifications, their loopholes that
yes.
they're trying to slide through. And this is a satanic church saying, loophole, we can fit through there too. And if they fight it, that means they're closing their own loophole.
Right.
You know, in deference to our friends in Oklahoma, who we did speak with this summer, who said, you know what, in Oklahoma, it's really hard to be out as an atheist and not constantly be associated with Satanism. I'm really sort of hoping that this doesn't damage the community, the atheist community
in
Oklahoma.
Sometimes you got to roll with it.
But I think I actually would advise embracing this particular move by Satanic Temple.
Yeah. The thing is I would also, I'd have no problem making fun of Satanism. I mean, it's incredibly silly. It's, there's the Anton LaVey guys, which is basically just atheism with pseudoscience and dinner theater.
I think this may be, Satanic Temple may be an alternate name for Church of Satan. I may be wrong in that case, but.
It seems really silly to me. It seems like people playing after school. You know, it seems like the dorky kid with the coat in high
okay.
school. You know what I mean? It has that feeling to me.
It has that feeling. Although I feel like the thing that we're taking away from the story mostly is that Sam has been calling for the Satanists to put their troll face on, and they have.
Yes.
Therefore, Satanists are fans of Ask an Atheist. We love to have you. Thank you, guys.
This may just be a correlation, not a causation, Dave.
So, from one paragon of evil to another. Pope Francis equates atheism with neglect of human dignity.
Oh, yay!
Pope Francis recently met with members of Dignitas Humanae Institute, a Catholic organization that promotes human dignity, warning against a false model of humanity. In his remarks, the pontiff lamented that when society does not base itself on the word of God, fragile individuals risk being thrown away in the name of efficiency. He concluded that this false societal model affects a practical atheism. It was not clear whether he thought atheism caused ill regard for human dignity, or whether the throwaway culture he decries produces atheists. Now, I regularly hear people, and we're talking about the Pope, and Mike isn't here, which is weird. I feel a little strange doing that. But a lot of people like to say that this Pope is so much better, and he's such a great guy, and he might be better than the last guy. He might be head and shoulders above the last guy, but that head and shoulders has yet to get out of the outhouse trench. I mean, frankly.
I want to like this Pope so badly. I want him to turn this behemoth of dogma into a modern age. And I feel like in some ways he's trying, and he says a lot of the right things, but then his actions don't back it up.
Right. He turns around and says stuff like this.
One of the funniest things is when he will say something off the cuff, and then the rest of the Vatican will go scrambling to say, oh, no, he didn't really mean that atheists can go to heaven.
Yeah.
Oh, he didn't really mean that we shouldn't focus on the unborn. But this may have been a scripted speech, since it was remarks to an organization. And I'm wondering how much behind the scenes this is, but I do
Does
think that
matter?
He has some control over that. If he didn't want to say these words, he wouldn't.
Does it matter?
So when you
Becky, does it matter?
No, I think Pope Francis, when he says that not basing your society on the word of God means that you are atheistic, which inherently is linked to throwing away people.
Yeah.
You're saying that atheists have no respect for human dignity.
Yeah, well, okay. Are you surprised?
I don't want to be surprised. I'm with Dave.
No, I'm not surprised. The Catholic Church is more than one guy. The problems with the Catholic Church run way deeper than the pontiff. That's,
certainly.
You know, that's just the head of the Hydra. It's just, there's real problems here. The child, what is this guy, if he is head and shoulders above the last guy, if he's really such a savior for the Catholic Church, what is he doing about the international child abuse conspiracy? What is actually going on? When do these people who have been systematically hurting children and then being ferried around the world in order to keep them out of prisons, when is he going to do something about that? This is not hypothetical. These are documented cases. These are people with warrants outstanding. Nothing is being done because it's bad PR. So he's really that much better?
Yeah, goes back to, I want to like him. He says a lot of the right things, but his actions don't back it up.
Yeah.
His actions is not done. He hasn't done anything. In fact, if you go back to the statement Becky just mentioned, when he said that the church needs to focus less on gays and abortions and women, women issues, but then he supports the excommunication of a priest in Australia just for saying maybe we should let women be priests. And
the other thing is that this is clearly a passing reference to abortion. The throwaway culture, weak people. That when the Pope says that, that is a reference to abortion. So he's not giving it up. So this is, I would rather have a Pope who's just a jerk and doesn't lie about being a jerk. Like the last guy. This guy seems to be a jerk, but just says nice things.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, if you're going to bring change to the world, if you're going to improve your church, you have to do more than just say nice things. You actually have to do something. You have to commit to change. And that doesn't appear to be happening here.
Yeah, he's more of a good PR guy than
he's a great PR guy, given the number of people of varying religions who have been very critical of the Catholic Church, who have said, wow, look at this new shiny Pope.
Yeah. That happens, though. Whenever you have somebody who's a leader who's considered really negative and really terrible, I can think of certain modern politics, there comes a time where a lot of people are just saying, I'll vote for anybody else. I don't care if it's a hamster, I'll vote for them. And I think we're having a little bit of this effect with Pope Francis.
Pope hamster.
Pope hamster. So we have another story, and someone we haven't talked about in a while, Malala Yousafzai. And she wrote a book recently.
She wrote a memoir.
Yeah. Pakistani education officials said that they have banned teenage activist Malala Yousafzai's memoir, I Am Malala, from private schools across the country, calling the young woman a tool of the West. They claim that the book doesn't show enough respect for Islam and that it would confuse school children. Malala attracted global attention last year for surviving a Taliban assassination attempt. While Malala has become a hero to many across the world for her bravery and advocacy, conspiracy theories have flourished in Pakistan that her shooting was staged to create a hero for the West to embrace. So this is great. Somebody shot for your religion. They recover. I call it miraculous, but it's not. It's science. I'm using it as a superlative in this case.
Right.
She recovers, and she becomes even more of an activist, and because she was shot in the head, gets attention, she's suddenly a tool of the West. This, again, here's religion for you. Somebody who wants to be educated is a tool of the evil West. And that's basically what this is.
It really is basically what it is. I also imagine that it would be confusing to school children who were taught that Islam is the way to go and that girls don't deserve to be educated. When you see a girl who
was shot because of your religion. A kid.
Hang on a second. Is the book really insult Islam by saying I doubt there's even a single word about Islam in that book. I haven't read it, but I almost guarantee you it's going to be about being educated more than anything else.
Which is an insult to Islam, according to them.
In our research on blasphemy, any imam can declare that something is blasphemous if it goes against the good of what they want to achieve. And so in that case, educating a girl could be blasphemous.
Okay, that's their standard. But let's talk about where the sky isn't plaid and where marshmallows don't fall from it. You know, in reality, wanting to be educated should not be against religion.
And it shouldn't be insulting for a girl to write something about her survival and say, this is where I want to be, this is where I came from.
Yeah, it's a little weird. We talked about blasphemy at the beginning. We took on blasphemy about a year ago. We really haven't really gone there since.
So, yeah, I mean, when you have something that's written by a young girl, I imagine that the Pakistani education officials that they're talking about right here, this is for private schools. And the private school system in Pakistan is a little bit different. It's not just, it's sort of like the more elite schools. And it would be within their rights to say, this is not a curriculum that we want to have.
Yeah.
But the fact is that this is something that is reaching children that could say, you have this opportunity to be educated. You have this right to be educated.
So we got one more email, which we should do quickly. We have Tony from the internet, and they write, it seems to me that a lot of times when people talk about terrorism, they usually blame Muslims for it. Do not be afraid to tell me I'm wrong. Is it just me, or is it really that Christianity seems to never be connected with this stupidity? I don't think it's never, but I think there's a tendency to whitewash it.
Yeah, it's definitely, there is some level when something terrible happens and a person with light brown skin did it, then everyone immediately starts standing up saying, it must be a Muslim terrorist, whereas if someone with white skin didn't, would be... The assumption is they're a criminal.
They don't even have to look at skin tone. We can go back to the Oklahoma City bombing, where before we knew who Timothy McVeigh was, not everybody, but there was a lot of people. The majority of people were just assuming it was going to be Muslim terrorists.
They said, yeah. We know that this is terrorists.
Yeah. We know it's terror. We know it's Muslim terrorists.
Yes.
Yeah.
You see what you just said terrorists, not qualifying it with Muslim.
I didn't.
The problem is this is the problem.
It's
we
endemic.
Hear terrorist, we think Muslim terrorist. We have the Houthari, we have Timothy McVeigh, we have their
Unabomber,
we have Uganda. I mean, Christian terrorism is a real thing, and according to statistics, there's more of that than a lot of the other kinds.
Yeah, it's...
It's not uncommon. This is ridiculous.
You hear the word terrorist, in your head you see a turban, see a long beard.
Oh, God. And on my disgust at the insensitivity of my hosts, I think we'll end on that note. My name is Sam. With me today was Dave and Becky. You can go to our website, askanatheist.tv. You can email us at questions@askanatheist.tv. You can leave us a voicemail at 206-420-0997. Me and my friends are going to continue this conversation at Doyle's. We'll see you guys there. Talk to you guys next week.
Clay Radio, your conversation station. We'll be right back.